I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening and following me on Twitter, at Paul Harris Show. If you've paid attention to all of the presidential elections thus far, you've heard in a lot of speeches a lot of talk about Wall Street and the big banks, particularly from Bernie Sanders, who, you know, his whole speech was built around how he was going to break up the big banks and how they were responsible for so much of the economic damage of the last decade or so. My next guest has written a book about that called Makers and Takers, The Rise of Finance and the Fall of American Business. She is the economic columnist and assistant managing editor at Time Magazine and a contributor to CNN. Rana Farooqar, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure having you here. Are the big banks still too big to fail?
Well, they are. They are, I think. I think that breaking up the big banks is certainly one of the things that we should be considering in the next few years. But I want to be clear, that's not a silver bullet to preventing financial crises. And it's only the tip of the iceberg of some of the issues we have with just how big and powerful the financial sector has become in our economy. So my book actually goes way beyond the too big to fail bank problem and looks at the sheer size of the financial sector, which creates only 4% of jobs in this country, but takes 25% of corporate profits. It's been growing like topsy for the last 40 years, and my thesis is that as finance has gotten this big, it's actually started to hurt business, which is exactly the opposite of what it's supposed to do. Financial services are obviously supposed to invest in businesses, help them grow, but there's a lot of statistical data now to show that that's exactly not what's happening. In fact, that's a minority of what banks do today.
You call this the financialization of banking, right?
That's right, yeah. And it basically covers two things, both a change in the business model of finance, but also the fact that it's just gotten too big for its britches, so to speak. So to the first point, banks used to take all of our money, hold them in the form of savings deposits, and then lend them out to businesses. Businesses would then grow the economy, create jobs, create prosperity, and so forth. Today, only about 15% of all the money in U.S. financial institutions is being invested in business. The rest of it is going to the buying and selling of existing assets. So it's basically making a small percentage of the population a lot wealthier, but it's not doing a lot to grow Main Street businesses.
So you're saying that instead of investing in other businesses, big banks decided, hey, we have all this money, that will be our business.
Exactly. You've got it. And, you know, what's ironic is that because banking has gotten so big and so powerful and so profitable, a lot of other sectors, other parts of the economy, travel businesses, manufacturing, high tech, has started to act like banks. So that's another part of my book, the way in which business is now starting to emulate banking. And just to give you a couple examples of that, you look at airline businesses now. Many of them get more money from hedging oil prices than they do from selling coach seats. Or you look at big tech firms that underwrite new bond offerings the same way that banks like Goldman Sachs do. So it's as if we're all bankers now.
As a matter of fact, today the U.S. government rescinded its designation of a division of General Electric called GE Capital as a, quote, systemically important non-bank financial institution. I think most people would be shocked to find out that General Electric, which they thought of as making engines and refrigerators and on and on, actually got more than half of its profits from finance.
Yeah, no, that's actually a whole chapter in my book. I mean, the story of GE has been an amazing story because this is sort of America's original innovator. You know, the company that was founded by Thomas Alva Edison made all kinds of great inventions. But in the 70s and 80s and 90s, they began turning towards finance under Jack Welch, cutting a lot of jobs, outsourcing a lot of manufacturing, and becoming a too-big-to-fail bank. The current CEO, Jeff Immelt, has actually been trying to flip that paradigm and take the company back to being a manufacturing powerhouse. But, you know, it's a long slog, and it's going to be an interesting example to see if the company can really make that shift.
Is what we're seeing going on now and have been seeing going on for several years simply a lack of regulation?
You know, I don't see it that way. I mean, I think that absolutely there have been some important rollbacks of some of the Depression-era legislation that served us so well for 50 years between the 30s and the 70s. And that's part of the story. And certainly Dodd-Frank has been made into Swiss cheese by many of the financial lobbyists, and we do need to close many loopholes still. But I think of it in a different way. I think that we need to stop thinking so much about how to get banks to stop doing bad things and start thinking more about how to incentivize banks, businesses, leaders to do the right things. You know, we have a whole system that is set up to create short-term incentives and pressures on companies to create reasons for CEOs to basically jack up their share price for the quarter and not make the investments that they need to for the long haul. And Wall Street pushes all those things, and we need to push back and say, no, finance is really here to help business, not the other way around.
Are companies putting more into things like stock buybacks than they are into research and innovation?
Yeah, and in fact, those two things have moved in an X. You know, as stock buybacks, which artificially increase the share price of a company and also disproportionately enrich the wealthiest Americans, as those have been increasing over the last 30 or 40 years, R&D spending, you know, which really grows Main Street economies, has been decreasing. So those two things have been rising and falling in perfect sync with one another.
That seems really bad to me for the entrepreneurial spirit that is supposed to be at the basis of American capitalism.
Well, it is. And in fact, you know, you look at the way that the number of startups has been falling since the 1970s. This is something that's become an issue on the campaign trail. Hillary Clinton actually just announced a plan to do some debt forgiveness for students who become entrepreneurs. And my thesis is that as finance has moved away from the business of lending to other businesses and gotten so much into the business of speculation and market pressure has become so extreme, fewer companies are starting. Fewer companies want to go public because they don't want that pressure, and there is less innovation and entrepreneurial zeal in our economy as a whole, which, of course, is what was always great about America. It was our big competitive advantage that we have that.
Okay, Rana, if you don't want to put a lot of the blame on the lack of regulation, can we at least agree that there are too many MBAs in this country?
Yes, I have a whole chapter on it. You know, and really, it's about what kind of MBAs are we educating? You know, I have a lot of business leaders saying to me, we're not getting what we need out of MBA programs. They're being taught financial engineering, balance sheet manipulation, but not really how to grow real businesses, to nurture talent, to innovate. And we need to flip the educational paradigm in business schools for sure.
Yeah, I just wish we had more scientists, more doctors, more engineers.
Absolutely.
You know, all of those STEM fields to me seem to be a lot more important than making money with your money.
Absolutely.
By the way, I will point out that anybody who has any kind of retirement money that's in a stock fund, you know, in their 401k or whatever, you appreciate the fact that there are people out there who are increasing the value of the shares of the stock that you have. But when it's to the detriment of our national economy, that's not a good thing in the end. You want that money to help make things, not just more money.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm advocating in the book. We need to get back to empowering the makers and, you know, the people that are really building things in our economy.
So would you call this a smoke and mirrors recovery that we've been going through for the last 8 years?
I would. I mean, I think it's been financially engineered by the Fed. I mean, the Fed was sort of the last institution standing post-2008. Politicians were unable to push through fiscal stimulus. Companies haven't been spending. So the Fed had to dump a bunch of money into the economy, and it's created a kind of what I call a genetically modified recovery rather than a real one.
One of the things that amazes me is finding out about how some of these big companies like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are working both sides of the street. For instance, they have a lot of significant holdings in things like agriculture and industrial metals. And meanwhile, they're also trading commodities in those same markets. Doesn't that leave things open to manipulation again, which is not good for us, the American consumer?
Absolutely. And, you know, there was a big scandal a few years back with Goldman Sachs hoarding aluminum in ways that were driving up the prices of cans for companies like Coke and Coors. I mean, the very fact that banks are allowed to get into the business of owning physical commodities is, I think, a real problem.
So how do we stop that?
Well, the Fed actually has the power to make new rules. It's a matter of whether or not there's going to be the political will to do that. And that brings me to another problem, which is that there is so much money in the financial sector that's being pumped into Washington. It's regularly one of the top two or three lobbying industries. And so that's really perverted a lot of efforts to try and stop some of this behavior.
And with the revolving door between Washington and Wall Street, there's no end in sight.
Unfortunately not, but
okay.
That's what my book's trying to work on.
Well, then I have to go back to regulation, even though you kind of poo-pooed it when I brought it up the first time. What about these laws that we were supposed to get after 2008? We were promised that these things would be fixed, and they've gone away.
Well, you know, I would put a lot of that down to financial lobbying pressure. You know, the financial industry is regularly one of the top two or three industries lobbying Washington. You know, in the author's note of my book, I talk about how 93% of all the consultation on some of the most contentious parts of the Dodd-Frank legislation were taken with the financial industry itself. So, you know, when those that are being regulated are also writing the regulation, of course, you run into problems.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I would not expect this to change very much under a Hillary Clinton presidency, considering the speeches that she gave to Wall Street and the, you know, Goldman Sachs, et cetera, and the coziness that there is between her and the very same people who we're talking about here today.
You know, I think a lot of people are worried about that, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how she handles that. And I think if she does become president, some of the legitimacy of her presidency is going to rest on whether or not she can really tackle those issues.
Do we have this same problem with smaller banks at the community level? I mean, if you get away from Citigroup and Chase and some of the others that we've been talking about here, and you just deal with a local bank that maybe has a branch or two or maybe even three in our region, are they part of this problem as well?
You know, community branch banks tend to be makers. You know, they tend to be the types of businesses that really are lending. I mean, because they're not in the big sort of trading field, they don't have the global reach. Unfortunately, many of them have been penalized because the regulation that was passed affects them. And you know, I hear from a lot of community bankers that their life has gotten more difficult because of the crisis, because they're being lumped in with the big banks.
So they're being punished for things that they're not doing. They're the ones who are actually out there making loans to local entrepreneurs and helping mom-and-pop businesses get off the ground?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, we really need to support those banks. We need more of that kind of behavior. I mean, finance has a role to play. You can't have a healthy economy without a thriving financial sector that actually does what it's supposed to do, which is lend and support business.
Yeah, but I think it's important that we make this point, because when people hear this, they might, you know, they meet some guy who's a banker, you know, they run into him somewhere, not because they're doing business, but they run into him socially or whatever.
Yes.
I don't want them to lump all of these people together. It's really the Wall Street and mega banks that are at the heart of this financial problem that is ongoing. Am I right?
Right. And, you know, there's also another sector called shadow banking, which has become a more and more important part of the story. So private equity firms, for example, that are not even regulated the same way that the big banks are, have now become the number one owner of single family housing in America, because they were able to come in post-crisis without regulation, buy up a lot of cheap properties. And we're now hearing problems with those properties and with private equity as a landowner. So, you know, it's a global system. It's a system in which there are a lot of concentric circles. You know, there's a whole ecosystem. We're all part of it via our 401ks, which fund asset managers, you know, who invest in some of the companies that are doing the wrong things and support some of the quote-unquote activist investors who are pushing companies in the wrong direction. So it's a big, big, complicated ecosystem, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, was to sort of explain how it all hangs together.
Somewhere Christian Bale's character from The Big Short is rubbing his hands together yet again.
I think so.
The book is called Makers and Takers, The Rise of Finance and the Fall of American Business. This is Rana Faruhar, who is the assistant managing editor and economic columnist for Time magazine. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you.